Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Welcome along to another edition of the D-Word Podcast. Good to have you company. My guest is David Wilson Wynn, who started his career as a care assistant and is now a senior dementia care consultant at the Dementia Services Development Centre at the University of Stirling. Well, David, it's a pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on the D-Word. Plenty to talk about. I mean, kick off. I mean, tell us just a little bit about your role there at the Dementia Services Development Centre at University of Stirling.
So, yeah, the role, I'm the senior dementia consultant based within the Dementia Services Development Centre, which is part of the Faculty of Social Sciences. The role has, I suppose, there's many strings to my bow. There's a number of different, I suppose, avenues. DSDC's job is to effectively translate research into tangible outcomes, areas that will help directly inform practice. But also there's other parts of it where it's in and around, for example, things like product accreditation. So we accredit products that people living with dementia will use or will engage with. We also provide consultancy services. So that can be from a range of national, international organisations, local, national government. There are even just some, you know, tiny little sole trader businesses that are just looking to make a difference that will come to us for consultancy service. Where DSDC has always centred itself has been in the specifics of design. So we were the first university to create a specific audit tool to allow us to be able to audit the physical environment. So that also takes in quite a chunk of my work as well. So we explore the importance of the environment for people living with a dementia. And in other parts include teaching. So I lecture on the undergraduate nursing and paramedic science programme. We have a mandatory module for all nursing and paramedic undergraduate students that they must take over the course of their three-year undergraduate studies, a module in dementia. And they graduate with a specific certificate of a course that they have undertaken as part of their undergraduate studies. So it's busy.
Absolutely. It very much sounds so. I mean, it's interesting what you just mentioned there about training for nurses and paramedics. I mean, you've got also a big background in the care sector as well as, you know, the work that you're doing now. And I sometimes have the feeling what we get, we'll probably do in life as well, get pushed down the medical model a bit too much in the terms of let's go to the doctor, get a pill. And in terms of when we look at dementia care, I often think it's probably to make it easier for the carer rather than the person living with a dementia. What's your kind of take on that?
Completely agree. So we've my opinion is that we've relied on the biomedical approach to dementia care for too long now. And sadly, we still know that the biomedical approach is the first resort, that still a number of practitioners will go down that route, as opposed to the more therapeutic approach to dementia care. I'm quite controversial in my view that the And this is directly informed by people living with dementia, what they tell me throughout the course of my work. I sit on the Scottish Government Dementia Strategy Advisory Group. The University of Stirling commissioned the literature review, which went on to inform the strategy. So all of our work is informed by what people living with the dementia tell us. And they will even say now to me, words like person-centered care is just branded about now. We seem to have lost the concept of what true person-centered care means. So when I ask them to replace that, so what would you prefer people say? They change the word centered to led. And for me, the word led, it's just complete. It's a completely different way. It's kind of revolutionized my way of thinking in terms of the person-centered model of care. I do automatically think of a multidisciplinary approach. It is collaboration, but not always the person living with the dementia that makes the final decision. Whereas a person-led approach is it's their diagnosis, they're in the driving seat, they lead, we merely follow, and we support and we scaffold as and when they want us to. But I completely agree. The biomedical approach to dementia, sadly, is still utilized quite a bit within day-to-day practice, and it's our job. I suppose the biggest non-pharmacological intervention that can be provided within dementia care is the environment, the importance of and our understanding of even the design of the environment. So yeah, completely agree.
Yeah, and that's, it's an interesting aspect as well, isn't it? When people think of things like, a number of conditions, but particularly dementia, the environment doesn't immediately come to mind, does it? It's not the first thing on the agenda, let's put it that way.
Well, absolutely, and I think that's why. I mean, I'll give a shout out to Professor Mary Marshall, who was just way ahead of her time. That was she founded the Dementia Services Development Centre. She was one of the first committed academics globally to understand and put forward the importance of the physical environment. Because our environment can be the difference between us engaging or not engaging, or being orientated or disorientated, being able to find our way to be able to meet a need. Whereas if people are not familiar with the environment, if it's overly confusing and doesn't have the things that will meet our needs in it, we will become stressed, we'll become frustrated, we'll become upset quite quickly. But part of it for me is it centers around two words within thinking about it from an environmental consideration. The two C's, and this is what people again living with the dementia tell me anyway, as a practitioner, that's often removed from them quite quickly, and it's choice and control. And the environment plays such a significant part in that. We need to have the choice over which environments we do want to be in and for how long, but also the control of what we do within those environments is fundamental to every single one of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more in terms of that. I mean, it's really great to, hear you played a part in the Scottish Dementia Strategy. I'd like to put in a word, we'd love one in England. Thanks very much. But, you're way ahead of the game there. But do you feel that, people that have got experience in care settings, etc., is it difficult for their voices to be heard? Because, if you've got an eminent medical professional, I'm sure who are brilliant what they do with lots of letters after their name, and you've got someone who turns up and says, I'm a carer, then general psychology will probably tell you that the person with the letters after the name is going to get listened to more.
It's exactly why whenever people will ask me to like write a biography or they'll ask me how my journey started, I'm always incredibly proud to say that I started as a care assistant in a care home, and have navigated my way around the field to then be in the position that I am today. But for me, I would always look at the credibility of even how a person living with a dementia engages with, for example, a carer, whether that be a formal carer or care partner, because sadly, I've seen many a consultant psychiatrist who are incredible at what they do in terms of their knowledge of the brain and how it works and their ability to truly understand dementia, but put them in front of a person who's living with a dementia, they struggle. they find it quite difficult. And even, I suppose, the same could be said with research, where we find that people will devote their whole careers towards research. But actually, if you were to go and sit them down in a care home lounge and ask them to sit and have a conversation with people with dementia, they might struggle with that. They might find it difficult. And that's fine. I think for me, you've hit the nail on the head of our automatic view of just because a person has, I have a master's in dementia from the University of Stirling, but would always still seek the view of a care assistant who's working 12 hours a day in a care home, or a nurse who's working, within a hospital ward or within a community setting. I would never ever just solely rely upon my own knowledge and expertise. I would always like to back it up with the views and the thoughts and the feelings of other practitioners. And right at the forefront of that has to obviously include people living with a diagnosis of a dementia as well.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam. A charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Always good to hear from you here on the D Word. You can find us on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and the email at tdwradio@gmail.com. This week I'm chatting to David Wilson Wynne from the University of Stirling. You know, I spent 2 years working for a major charity running activity groups for people living with dementia. And I found that my volunteers were the people that taught me the job, basically. They knew a lot more than I did. They had a lot more interaction with our clients, as it were. But when I found myself in meetings, I almost had to take their ideas because I had the word manager after my name. And I was listened to, whereas if I take one of my volunteers, it would have been, well, yeah, thanks very much, but you're only a volunteer.
So there's two things. I remember a very good friend of mine once said to me, if you want to implement change or you need to truly ascertain what's happening within an organisation, speak to the receptionist. Don't start immediately with the CEO. And I've always taken that and thought, well, actually, it's very, very true. The second point, I promise I'll not get up on my high horse about this, but there's always been throughout my career, but you're not a nurse. You're not a nurse, David. And even still, sadly and very frustratingly, I will never, ever fully understand as to why a lot of dementia specialist jobs, you have to be a nurse. I will never understand that. And we talk about the biomedical model, don't we? So it's that for me. I completely agree with you that I could go into a situation as a senior dementia consultant and deliver a session on our understanding of supporting a person who presents with unmet need. If I were to go in and present that, or walk into lecture theatre A and present that, but if you were to then have a care assistant from a care home who was delivering the same session but in lecture theatre B, it would be very, very interesting to see just how many people would navigate between either between sessions, or would just immediately look and go, well, yeah, he's a senior dementia consultant, he's from a university, he's got his master's, I'm going to hear what he's got to say. I know that even if it were me in the position that I'm in, I'd much rather navigate my way down the care assistant route.
Yeah, I think I'll be in there with you actually. So, I think we'll both be sitting next to each other there. And in terms of, the job of a care assistant, it's not well paid. It's very stressful. A lot of people probably think, well, why do you do it? I mean, can you train a carer, or do you need that kind of inbuilt empathy and ability to communicate with people, and your training can build on that? Or can you kind of start from scratch with somebody who hasn't got that?
I've been really fortunate to have done a lot of teaching and training in my career so far. And actually, I viewed it as, in one aspect, you can always tell people that just have that natural ability to care, that are empathetic, that are compassionate, that are diverse in their approach. But actually, I also view it as a challenge when I love nothing better than walking into a lecture theatre and a student will raise their hand and say, why am I sitting in this dementia lecture theatre? Because, or sorry, why am I sitting about to undertake this lecture in dementia, considering I don't want to work with old people? I immediately will stop and I'll say, you're my challenge. You right now, I need to make sure that by the end of the day, you're not thinking like that. So for me, actually, there's been many of occasions where back in previous jobs that I had as a clinical trainer, whereby it would be new care assistants to the organisation and it would be part of their induction. I'd actually view it as a challenge that if they were to sit there and tell me that they actually, they applied for this job because there was no other jobs there, they're not particularly interested in it, etc. It's my job to inspire. It's my job as a teacher, as a trainer, in which to do that. And I would hope that for people that have sat in sessions that I've delivered before, that I've been able to execute that in a way that's not forced, but rather just lets their own minds change and develop as sessions go on. Because we do find that, sadly, predominantly within a care, even within the care sector, of whereby somebody will say, yeah, so why am I sitting doing dementia training? Because I did my dementia course 5 years ago. So they think that they should just do one dementia awareness course, in 2025, and then that's it for the rest of their career. They don't have to do it again. So yeah, but sadly, what we don't do is still talk about the fact that the career of a carer is indeed a professional career. It is how I started, and I will always say to people, I could have gone down the kind of bog standard, left school, gone to university, and graduated and got myself a job. I probably would have maybe perhaps found myself in this job much quicker. But actually, where I have been very fortunate is that by the time I got this job, I had 15 years worth of tangible, practical experience behind me to evidence, compared to a qualification on a bit of paper, perhaps.
Yeah. And do you think that if the pay was better, that you would get more people, and that you would get more of the right people, and you would get people, to actually occupy a career path whereby they could start and as you yourself did, and kind of follow the path that you followed?
I think pay is one part. I think pay, absolutely, people need to be recognised for the job that they do, and they need to be paid for the job that they do. For me, the question of the pay never really came into it. What it was for me was about pathway. How do I navigate my way around the health and social care sector? I know what my end goal is. My end goal was to be within a position like this, whereby I could influence a far bigger, wider captive audience, but not just both nationally but internationally. I can influence policy. I can influence change where I am. But actually, as a care assistant in a care home back in 2009, I was still able to influence. I was still able to change. I just didn't know how. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know if I was allowed to do it. So for me, what I've had to do is actually maybe be within a job for only a year, take out of that job what I can, whether it be experience, whether it be qualifications, and then move on. There has been occasions whereby I've been in a very, very well-paid job within the care sector, and I've left that to get a job where I know it's considerably less pay, but I need that experience to then get me to then the next stage. So nobody's going to do it for you, I think would be my advice within the care sector of that is you have to do that yourself. And that's even why now within the Dementia Services Development Centre of the University of Stirling, we are now looking at trying to develop and create a roadmap that allows people to perhaps come to DSDC for almost like a light touch course, but exposes them to then what is research and the latest research and our best practice guidance around dementia care. But it's a start for them, and then they can use that as a stepping stone to then an accredited qualification. They can then use that to then go into undergraduate qualifications or postgraduate level, and then find their way actually navigating not just with qualifications, but then through that additional experience, different job titles, different job roles.
So I suppose, you have to be able to think outside the box. And I guess, you have to have a little bit of courage as well, doesn't it? To kind of stand up and say when something isn't right. Because it's, as they say, if you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you always got. And it takes a special person to do that and have that confidence, I guess.
It does, and it requires, you nobody gets anywhere standing still. It's for me, I've been really, really fortunate to have had the most incredible mentors throughout my career that have pushed me to take opportunities. That even when a job has come up and I've looked at it and I've thought, oh, no, there's no way I'll get that, they've said, get your application in. So you're at least in front of them. They can see you, they can hear you, they can listen to what your experience has been. But you're right, because it is also in some aspects of care culture can be a toxic culture. You're dealing with colleagues that are stressed, that are overworked, underpaid, emotionally, physically, mentally. It's a demanding job. And often that's why we tend to find that even the conditions of workplace, one of the biggest research outputs, if you design an environment like a care home or a hospital more effectively, if that improves the quality of care and quality of life and the presentation of the person living with the dementia, by default, it helps improve the staff because they're not having to. It's even down to the point of if a person within an environment doesn't know where a toilet is, it's the time that that would occupy for staff to constantly have to guide that person to the toilet. Whereas a simple sign at a height whereby the people can see it eliminates that straight away. Creating a contrasting colored door, an image of a toilet. It's these things whereby actually when we look at the outcomes of even the design of an environment, the outcomes, the tangible outcomes for staff are huge.
I think, I think generally speaking, actually, when we look at our environment anyway, it can be a very confusing place. And a lot of things, a lot I'm sure you're looking at would be great for everybody in terms of things. I got a story where I took my father to a hospital and he had to go and have an X-ray and all the signs said diagnostic imaging. And there were loads of people wandering around going, can you tell me where X-ray is? Because suddenly it had become diagnostic imaging. So.
You're absolutely right, but the terminology, the terminology is a huge thing for me within dementia care. But even just down to the fact that when you walk into, I'll not name the hospital, but a hospital that I've frequented quite a lot within the past, whether it be both professionally or personally, all the signs that direct you to the areas of the hospital are dangling from the roof. So we know that for people living with a dementia or for people who are aging to compensate for the aging posture, they just do not see these signs at all. They then installed this electronic, live bus timetable, but again, it's pretty much dangling from the ceiling. So you're right, it's even actually the environments which we would hope would be supportive and inclusive, sadly, are often the worst.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, the care sector's pretty heavily regulated and needs to be so because you've got to keep people safe. When I was doing my job looking after people throughout the week, activity groups, I mean, I wanted to firstly know who all the people were, and I said I had about 50 people to come throughout the week, my first exposure was, here are these sheets of policies. Please read all these policies and procedures. Tell us you understand and sign on the bottom line. And I thought, okay, fine, let's do that. I then meet 50 people through the course of a week and think, I want to know something about each one of those 50 people so I can connect. So it was music, it was sport, it was where they lived, it was stuff that they taught me, gardening. I'm not a good gardener, but I got taught stuff. And yet, when I came to have what was a total quality audit, the auditors were interested in bits of paper, signs that nobody read, books that nobody read being on the right table. And when I started to say, well, actually, that over there is Alice, whose favourite band is the Dave Clark Five, used to go to the Royal at Tottenham. That over there is Dennis, used to work in the Rag Trade at the East End. They couldn't have been more bored, to be honest, because they didn't want to know that at all. How do we get those social things up the ladder so they're treated exactly the same as all those policies and procedures?
So the when it comes to regulation, I think the biggest issue has always been, I mean, and again, I'm just speaking purely from a personal experience, but there's always been an aspect of fear with regulation, as opposed to looking upon some aspect of regulation as a positive thing, of a safeguarding or of a protective thing. My biggest issue that we have is that there are so many policies now within place that actually, by default, it's automatically just become very restrictive. For example, within Scotland, we speak about a human rights-based approach to dementia care, but our legislation and our policy is nowhere near that level yet. So we can advocate for a human rights-based approach to dementia care, but actually evidencing it and doing it is a completely different thing. I always had a very good relationship with the regulators within Scotland. So we within Scotland, we have the, for example, the Care Inspectorate. I mean, the Care Inspectorate would come into homes. I was the dementia lead for a care home group prior to this job. And I think part of it was around me just always being very open and honest, advocating for the people that were within my care. And actually, sometimes just having very open and frank conversations with regulators by saying, you don't know everything. You don't know the people. You're not spending as much time with these people as what I am. But also, I completely understand your point that when it comes to the fact of knowing the people that we are supporting, often, sadly, we're going into some situations completely blind. So, I started one of the first choirs for people living with the dementia in Scotland. And the reason as to why I started it, and at that time, the word dementia and choir really hadn't been put together. It's now obviously a very, very big thing, but this was back in 2013. And actually, the reinforcing of stigma and discrimination in the early days of that choir was huge, because people just couldn't put the word dementia and choir together. How are you ever going to teach somebody with dementia a song, for example, was one piece of feedback. The other piece of feedback was a group of people buying tickets for a laugh because they thought it would be funny to see people living with a dementia singing together in a choir. Funnily enough, these were the same people that left before I could nab them at the end when I asked them, how did you find that experience? Because they didn't know the people. They didn't know the people that were standing on the stage. You've illustrated it perfectly in the respect of you could have a regulator walk in that's more interested in what your HR policy is compared to that of the life of the person who's sitting next to you, who you've just made a huge difference to by speaking about their favourite football team or by speaking about an aspect of their life. And even times of whereby I do a very, very simple thing when I'm delivering training or teaching to either students or organisations, where I ask them to just take a piece of A4 paper and draw a line vertically down the middle of the A4 paper, at the bottom put born and at the top put present day. And you've got 10 minutes in which to construct your timeline of your life, the good, the bad, the ugly. And we often tend to find that after 10 minutes, a number of people are either very emotional because they've taken that time to sit and reflect on everything. But a high proportion of people will often feed back to me. What I've just found really surprising, Dave, is the fact that I've in my mind, when I was thinking about primary school, a chap called Tim came to my mind. I've not thought about Tim since I left school, but yet he's come to my mind now straight away. And they'll often say to me, "Well, why is that?" But part of me will put back to them, "Well, he's still there, isn't he? He's still in your mind, but you don't know when that could come back." So what I'm now trying to advocate for is that if everybody constructed their timeline, if everybody had that piece of paper that could change, and we update it and we review it. But before I walked into a person's house when I was a post-diagnostic link worker, if I was given a piece of A4 paper that was basically their life on a page, how different that would be for me as the practitioner and what a different experience it would mean for them. And it was things like that that I would very openly challenge the regulator on. So you've ripped that person's care plan apart and told me everything that's wrong with it. Have you spoke to the person? You tell me, what do you know about them? And often you were met with silence. So yeah, I do agree. I think regulation's got its place, but shouldn't just necessarily always be feared. And if we see something that's not right, even if it's within regulation, we need to confront that head on.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio now has over 40 health-based shows, and you can find them all on the website at ukhealthradio.com. My guest this week is David Wilson-Wynn from the University of Stirling. Another area, marginally changing the subject, the importance of humour. Now, when I started working with people living with dementia, and this is, it's a comment. It's a comment made to me, oh, I bet that'll be a barrel of laughs. And to be honest, it was, because I had some of the best times over 2 years. I had some of the best one-liners I've ever heard in comedy. But because we're dealing with a terminal condition, people find it difficult to put humour and dementia in the same box.
I've always used humour as a way of engaging and getting people on side. Now, part of it may be I was bullied a lot at school, particularly primary school, because I wore glasses. So what I would do, if I could make the bully laugh, they'd leave me alone. So I had this, and I've taken that now forward. So when I'm lecturing nursing students, my objective is that within the first 15 minutes of me lecturing them, I need to hear them laugh. If I can hear them laugh, then it opens up engagement like you just wouldn't believe, really. And I see it all the time. I don't want people coming in thinking that, yeah, dementia is, it's a devastating diagnosis. It's a terminal diagnosis. but also the amount of people. We have a guest lecturer that comes in, a lady who's living with a diagnosis of a dementia. She talks about her dementia, and she absolutely does bring that more humorous side to it, because she knows that actually that's the reality. That's the reality of it. The reality of dementia is there was one charity that I used one of their campaigns a number of years ago, and it was children interviewing people living with the dementia. But that video clip that lasts for around, I think it's around about 2.5 minutes, illustrates the reality of dementia. And that is, by this, at the start of the video, you're absolutely killing yourself laughing. It's a really funny video. But then by the end, the vibe changes a little bit and it becomes quite emotional, very emotive to watch, actually. But actually, at the very end, then a lady with dementia says one line and it makes everybody laugh again. And even the people, the kids are laughing, the people with dementia themselves are laughing, the people I show it to are laughing. But when it comes to the end of that video, all I say to people is, that is dementia in 2.5 minutes. Some days you'll get up, you'll laugh, and you'll take the mic, and you'll just make light of a situation. Other days you'll wake up and it's the most stressful, heartbreaking, difficult thing to ever experience or support someone going through. But I'm with you. One of my idols, when I say it to the young nursing students, they just look at me rather blankly, was Ken Dodd. I absolutely loved Ken Dodd. Dad used to take me to see him all the time. But he would often say, if I can make one person laugh in a day, I've done my job. I can go to my bed happy. And people are even surprised when I speak about aging and an introduction to aging and utilise stuff that Ken Dodd used to say about getting old. It's the most successful way of me getting it across. I can talk about well-researched theories of aging, etc., and blah, blah, blah. But actually, if I could utilise Ken Dodd's way of saying, you know you're getting old when you wake up in the morning and you've got a bald-headed son. Or when everybody starts buying you lavender bath cubes for Christmas. You start making noises as you're coming off the chair. You're taken home early from parties. It's stuff like that, because when people laugh about it, often I tend to find they all look at one another and go, but it's so true. And they remember it. If I can make someone laugh, there's more likelihood of them being able to remember why they laughed, what my point was, and even perhaps maybe what I've said after, after the whole kind of humorous part. So I'm totally with you. I'll always continue to use humour.
A fellow Ken Dodd fan, we are definitely in the same club. One of the best one-liners I ever had. I had an old boxer. He came from Kentish Town in London, H, and I got chatting to him, and he said, "Yeah, you know, I'm one of 13 children." And I said, 13 children, H? He said, "That's amazing." He said, "Yeah, it would have been 12, but Mum and Dad didn't have a TV." And again, everybody laughed, and it was tremendous. You know, it was great. Sadly, our time is kind of coming to a close. I mean, kind of big one for the last. If you could have two things that would improve things for people living with dementia in terms of care, what would they be?
Oh, a tough one. I would say, controversially, regardless of someone's capacity, they should always have the ability to choose and control what it is they do, when they do it, why they do it, where they're doing it. We should never get to a point whereby we just utilise capacity of a way of control. There should always be that viewpoint of the thoughts, feelings, the opinions of people living with a dementia should be known and shared. It's up to us to ascertain and I suppose help them understand what it is that we're asking of them. The second one would be for more significant work to be done for people who are living with advanced dementia, advanced stage dementia, and kind of palliative end of life, because it's a subject we don't like to talk about, but we will all experience whether we're aware of it or not. And for me, it's that whole viewpoint of there is a very, very influential video that's available online of a lady, Naomi Felt, who was the founder of Validation Therapy back in the 80s. And she's sitting with a lady called Gladys Wilson, and it's a very well-known video clip within the field of dementia care. She absolutely illustrates the point that no matter how advanced a person living with a dementia is, they're still in there. It's up to us to get them out. So that would be my second point. The second point would be is always afford people with advanced dementia the same opportunity as you would give to someone if they were just diagnosed, yesterday. Regardless of stage, people should be afforded the same opportunity and should be afforded the same level of choice and control as well.
David, it's been absolutely fascinating. We're going to have to get you back on the show for us to chat some more. But for now, anyway, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thanks so much, Pete, for the opportunity. It's been lovely. Lovely to meet you.
Thanks so much to David. Really enjoyed our chat, and always a pleasure to meet a fellow Ken Dodd fan. You can find out more about the Dementia Services Development Centre at the University of Stirling from the website www.dementia.stir.ac.uk. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat, and boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.